Hope you're having a great weekend. This is our weekend review. It's a look back at some of the most compelling and interesting stories that we've been covering for you of the past week. Brand new episodes back again Monday. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Scott Rutter's with us of Evidence Room and Crime Scene Time Machine Podcast. We're going to be talking about the Daybell trial. Lots of evidence being presented this week. Both physical, time-stamped digital evidence, and also quite a bit of emotional testimony and evidence coming to light. I'm just going to open it up to you, Scott. What has been standing out to you in this past week of testimony?
Yeah, sure. You know, I listened to the phone call with Lori's sister, and that was very emotional. You know, the calmness of Lori Daybell when being confronted by her younger sister about, you know, how could you just move on dancing and being happy in Hawaii when your kids are missing and they're found in a pet cemetery and so on. And you know, her sister was hysterical, as you would imagine somebody to be, but Lori Daybell was so calm and creepily calm on that phone call. Although reports say that she did break down in the courtroom during that portion. I think the thing that stuck out to me was the cross-examination by Lori Daybell's attorney of the younger sister, where, you know, she established that prior to 2018, that nobody had any concerns about Lori being a good mother, about her loving her children, about, you know, how her daughter was a little bit sassy, but Lori was very patient with her. And then he started getting into a little bit of the background of, well, then now these new theories of religious philosophy started popping up in 2018 about, you know, reincarnation and, you know, evil auras and zombies and her being a goddess and so on and so forth. And I think what the defense is trying to do there is establish that prior to 2018, Lori was a pretty normal facing mom who loved her kids. And then something happened in 2018 that caused her personality to really just fracture, where these extreme, you know, ideologies came out. And I think that's going to be part of the defense, that they're going to say she was influenced by her new husband and that it's her new husband's fault. And I think that's where the defense is starting to go.
And I'm really curious about that. A lot of times when we think about somebody that has a dramatic break or a shift, we think it's something negative quite often. And I mean, obviously this is negative with what was going on with the children dying. But I don't know. I'm trying to piece it together. There doesn't really seem to be a dramatic trauma point that at least we're aware of with Lori and Chad. I mean, they created trauma with, you know, the husband and the wife dying by unnatural causes and such. But prior to that, she was already acting kind of crazy and saying very bizarre things. Does it always take some sort of trauma to make somebody snap and go down that road? Or can it be something almost the opposite, almost an awakening, if you will, although it'd be very misguided, for someone to kind of snap, but they snap and they think they're doing the right thing. It's not a, I'm out of my mind and out of control.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be a slow ooze, you know. We've all heard about, you know, the term, you know, down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You know, you first look into the rabbit hole and there's something there, right? You know, that's where a lot of these conspiracy theories come from, where you know, you look in and there's something there, but then you start going down deeper and deeper and it's a slow fall. So I think that it doesn't have to be something traumatic that happened all of a sudden, but it could just be an overtaking of her psyche with this new ideology being, you know, reconfirmed by the people around her, you know, reading things that confirm these theories that she has. And it was just, it could be a slow creep. It doesn't necessarily have to be a dramatic break of the psyche, but it could be a slow, you know, deterioration of that psyche due to the type of materials that she was intaking and the type of people that she was surrounding herself with, her new husband, that slowly manipulated her, or she slowly allowed herself to, you know, believe these things. I think there's going to be a combination of, you know, a weak-minded person, who's looking for answers, and, you know, I'm not trying to make any excuse for her because obviously what she did was despicable. But just from a psychiatric standpoint, not that I'm a psychiatric doctor, but just being a human being, you would think that, you know, it's this intake of information that slowly overtakes her and then consumes her. And, you know, unfortunately that, looks like it consumed the entire family, in a really tragic way.
Let's talk about some of the evidence that has been found, specifically the bodies of the kids. And I'm not trying to get gross or graphic or anything, but obviously they were not found in great conditions. Tylee literally found burned in pieces. I believe the word melted was used in there in a bucket, and found in the backyard. JJ was found more intact than Tylee. Once, obviously, the, other than finding the bodies of these children or the remains of these children, what other pieces or what sort of pieces of evidence would they be looking for to help tie this to Lori and Chad or Alex, other than just the fact here's some bodies buried underground? What other pieces of evidence are going to be there that could link them to somebody?
Well, I mean, I would look for, you know, toxicology. You know, there's still, you know, meat on the bone. I don't mean to say it like that, but you need material to test, right? So if there's still viable material of the body that you can test for toxins that were in the body that could have led to the death. You know, these were, you know, relatively, I mean, these were big kids. These weren't little tiny children. You know, these were teenagers that were, you know, fairly capable people that would be able to defend themselves if they saw something coming. So I would think, as an investigator, I'm looking for poisons. I'm looking for something that incapacitated them so that they could be killed by, you know, whether it was Lori or the husband or the stepfather. But I would be looking for some kind of a poison that would give them the opportunity to then, you know, get rid of the body and ultimately, you know, try to just, you know, to hide it. So that's what I would be looking for is there what kind of a poison or some kind of a substance that incapacitated them initially, and then try to relate that poison or whatever that might have been back to something that would have been in the possession of Lori or her husband.
And then see exactly how that all matches up. Quick last thoughts here. This obviously continues to get deeper and deeper and crazier, and it's hard to predict, but what do you predict we have for the next week or so here until the next time we talk in the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybill?
Well, I mean, who knows what's going to be happening here. You know, it looks like she's going to be sitting there in the courtroom. The judge is not going to have to bind her and gag her to sit there through it. I think she's going to sit there and suffer through it. We're going to have more revelations of just sadness and disappointment of a family that, you know, really just never had the opportunity to fully, you know, realize the fruit of the world you know, it's just a sad, sad situation. I just Tony, on a human level, you know, these cases, you know, I feel like I got to take a shower, you know, I do research on these cases, just to, you know, get back to, you know, having some love and life in my heart, so that we can go out there and treat people the right way. And, you know, these are very they're not very happy moments, doing research on these kinds of cases, because they don't make a lot of sense. You know, these are sad people that are going through traumatic situations, and, you know, I feel for everybody. And, you know, I hope that, through this tough evidence that we see, justice will be done. The veil of reality will start to lift in front of Lori, and, eventually, you know, those kids and their memories can start to rest in peace slowly, little by little, day by day.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Scott Rutter of Evidence Room, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insights. Scott, your podcast, Crime Scene Time Machine, what's going on over there?
Well, over on Crime Scene Time Machine, we dropped a new podcast this week, back to being, you know, in our serious investigation. It's an unsolved mystery. 2019, Rocky River, Ohio. The unsolved murders of Kate Brown and Carnell Sledge, two friends sitting on a park bench in a overlooking a creek, just having a nice friendly visit, when somebody came up from behind them, shot him twice in the back of the head while sitting on a park bench, and then shot her, the girl, as she fell into the creek. There has been no leads. There's been no arrests. I'm going to be working with Unsolved Mysteries, the TV show on Netflix, to put together a live shoot on that coming up this year. And I dropped the podcast where we're interviewing the family and going over the facts and circumstances of this terrible unsolved mystery, the death of Kate Brown and Carnell Sledge. Over on Crime Scene Time Machine. I urge everybody to come over and take a listen to it. It's an important case.
All right, awesome. Check it out. If you like this podcast, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the cases we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.